Brandon. Brandon. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you. Okay. So, good evening, everybody. My name is Brandon. I am an alcoholic. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. So, last time I was here, we went over the doctor's opinion because I felt like, I guess the way I was moved was like I wanted to start off with the doctor's opinion, thinking about, you know, what's wrong with me, so to speak, what my problem is, and then go into We Agnostics this week, thinking about, you know, where my solution lies and how I kind of got to the willingness and pursuit of a relationship with a power greater than myself. And then I'm thinking next week I'll lead more into 10, 11, and 12, talking about where I'm at today. So this week I feel like the direction I want to take is beginning at page 44 of We Agnostics. I don't know if you want to read along, but I'm going to read through and talk about what this was like for me and the importance of finding this God in my life. So before I actually start reading, I just want to say that probably the most impactful thing that ever happened to me was the decision to turn my will and my life over to the power of God as I understood Him. It is no exaggeration to say that in every area of my life, this has been the most important thing and continues to be to this day, is the conscious ceding of my will to my God and sort of being willing to take direction rather than me try to get what I want out of life. So with that backdrop, let's go into this. And the chapter begins, in the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. I just want to make a quick aside, which is that when I'm working with a new person, one of the things that I like to do to qualify them is to take them to this line and say, you know, do you think you're alcoholic or not? And they're like, well, what the hell does that even mean? And I say to them, like, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. You know, and I think there's a lot of descriptions of alcoholism in the book in various ways, but I think this one is just so succinct. You know, it just so clearly illustrates like the core symptom that we have of being unable to drink successfully and just being powerless over alcohol. So, as it says, if that's the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. To one who feels he is atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And I chuckle at that a little bit because for anybody other than alcoholic, that's a pretty easy alternative. You know, it's only for people who are alcoholic who think that it's not easy alternatives to live on a spiritual basis or to die an alcoholic death. It sounds so absurd, right? If you go to anybody who's like a social drinker and they're like, all right, you can die a horrible alcoholic death or you can just live on a spiritual basis. And they're like, well, geez, that's an easy one, right? But to me, that did seem like difficult alternatives. And I think it does to many of us because at its core, neither one seems like a life that I wanted to live. You know, I didn't want to live a life where I just slowly died an alcoholic death. And I didn't think my alcoholic death was going to be quick. I thought it was going to be just like a slow rotting away inside until I finally died. And that was awful. That was a prospect I was not interested in at all. But I also didn't want to live a spiritual life because I perceived that as being no fun and rigid, and I was going to have to fake a bunch of things I didn't really believe in, And it wasn't a way of life that was appealing to me. And thank God, my problem is that I had no idea what living a spiritual life meant. And if I really would have understood that I could still live a spiritual life and be happy and have fun and still make ridiculous jokes and have friends and be spontaneous and do all these other things, that I probably wouldn't have resisted the idea so hard. So moving on from there, they say, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought that we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. So it's definitely my experience, and I'm very grateful that I'm such a, I guess, average and unspecial alcoholic that I just fit neatly into this book. It didn't feel that way at first, by the way. I wanted to be special, but it turns out I'm not, and that's a good thing. So my experience is that when I was first trying to get clean and sober, I remember like the first or second meeting that I went to. I was in like Summit Oaks on suicide watch, and like, you know, I had no doorknob and all of that stuff. And they brought meetings in, and they, you know, unfurled those shades that, you know, the steps are printed on. I remember looking at that and hearing the people talk and thinking, God, these people are a bunch of idiots. What does any of this have to do with drinking? And I wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. I thought that it looked stupid, hokey, and obviously ineffective because it doesn't even mention anything about, like, not drinking. And so I purposely tried to avoid anything to do with 12-step fellowships. And I hoped that there was going to be a way where I would be able to deal with this on my own. I really thought that there would be some type of way where I could take a break and then, you know, basically all the stuff they talk about in the book. I thought, like, I could take a break and then I would be fine. Or I could change my brand or my environment. All of the stupid things that everybody tries. I tried all of those. And eventually, I went to an outpatient program, and I told them, like, I want nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys aren't affiliated with them, right? And they're like, no, we're not affiliated with them. And then, like, within the first 3 days, they told me I had to go to meetings, and I was like, you lied to me. You sons of bitches. And it turns out that it was a technicality. They're not affiliated with AA, but they still make you go. And I was very unhappy with that. But the thing is that being forced into it was really good for me because at that point, I was willing to do just about anything. You know, like I said, I was suicidal. I wanted, like, nothing more than just to die and, like, have it be over because the life I was living just wasn't worth living. So I was willing to try something different, which was to try and come to this power. But I mean, I resisted it hard for a long period of time, and because I didn't understand what it even meant. And so, like it says here, you know, I really didn't want to do that. I thought I was like an atheist. I didn't believe in any kind of God, and I was very resistant to it. But, you know, experience shows you need not be disconcerted. You know, for me, I eventually got to the other side of that. So let's move on from there. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Oh, man. Again, very true for me. I thought that I had a good code of morals, and I thought that I, you know, knew right from wrong, and that I mostly behaved in accordance with that. But looking back, really what it was is I had a sort of understanding of what might have been right or wrong, but almost no adherence to it, because I could rationalize or justify any of my selfish behavior and find a way to make it fit by like forcing the entire universe to bend around what I wanted. I could find a reason that anything I did was okay. You know, and you guys were wrong because you just didn't understand. And so the problem is, I didn't have the power to beat any of this stuff because I was fighting me. You know, the problem rests in my mind. And if I'm fighting me, I can't win 100% of the time. I am just as smart and cunning as myself. So therefore, I'm going to lose regularly. And there's nothing I can do about that. And the problem is, when I lose, that means I'm going to get drunk. I cannot fight against this illness by myself, because this illness has all the same resources as me, and it will beat me, if not 50% of the time, then more. And so that's my experience, is that, you know, philosophy and morals did absolutely nothing, because I just didn't have the power to overcome it. Again, very grateful that my experience sort of syncs up with this. It removed my excuses pretty quickly when I started reading this book. So, like it says, lack of power is the dilemma. Well, moving on to the next paragraph, it says, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. And reading this, it's hard for me to pick better words to describe my own experience, because it's so true. I remember thinking things like, religious people are idiots. Obviously, you know, these people are following rules. They're not even doing a good job following them. You know, and they're a bunch of hypocrites. They're not any fun. And for what? Like the possibility that maybe one day when they die, they'll get something for it. And, they're just going to suffer this entire life to possibly get something that I think is, you know, nonsense anyway. So that's the way I felt. I thought that, you know, religious people were boring, hypocritical, and just intellectually lazy. And I honestly felt that way at the time. And there were also times where I would get these ideas of like, well, I believe there's something out there, but I have no idea what this thing is, and I really don't think that it's the idea that I was brought up with as a kid. And, you know, much like this, it says, you know, the idea that somebody tried to impress upon them as a child. I had no idea that you could change your belief. I thought that either you believed in God the way that you were taught as a kid, or else you didn't. There was one or the other. You know, there's this set of ideas, and that's God. And then there's people who see through it and think that it's nonsense. And that was my understanding. It wasn't until I came into here and out of necessity, you know, read this book and got with people who explained to me that there is flexibility, you know, and they say the hoop you have to jump through is a lot bigger than you think. That saved my life. And, you know, specifically reading through this chapter, so much of this stuff rings true for me that when I read it, I chuckle because I'm just like, oh yeah, me too. I remember thinking that. I remember doing that, you know? And thank God that almost all of my ideas that I used to have were wrong, you know, and that once I went through this stuff, I found ideas that do work. So I'm going to go through here and continue where it says, yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you may find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. So I'll pause there. And my experience with this is that when I read through Bill's story initially, and you know, he's sitting across the table from his buddy Ebby, and Ebby says to him, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And he says it melted the icy intellectual mountain. It felt that way for me. It felt like it was a revolutionary idea. The idea that I could choose my own conception. Because my problem is that if I can't believe in something, I can't fake it. I don't know what it is, but I'm not built that way. I either can believe in something and get behind it and I'm all in, or else I'm all out. And so saying that I can believe with what I want gave me the freedom to be all in. Because what it said is, anything that doesn't work for you, get rid of it. You don't have to be held back by that. You can pick what does work and go with that. And like it says here, even if it's completely limited, and I had no idea what God was. All I knew was that it was something that, to me, is enough to restore me to sanity and to take care of me and my life better than I can. And that everything else is really just a mystery. You know, to me, it was just like this power. And I think for me personally, that was the minimum requirement, you know, because we talk about a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. And it's like, that is, as far as I can tell, the requirement. It has to be a power greater than me, and that can restore me to sanity. Otherwise, like, what am I doing, right? Otherwise, it doesn't meet the criteria. So that's what I started off with. I started off with, like, God is this ultimate power that I have absolutely no understanding of, but that was enough to get me over the hump. So with that, I started doing what I was told in these rooms, which was to pray regularly, and I started to pray sincerely, which was something that I hadn't done before. You know, and I think I talked about this a little bit last week, which is that up until I came into the rooms of AA, prayer was reciting somebody else's words, almost like a spell incantation, where like if you say the right words in the right order, something will happen, and that went right out the window when I came in here, and somebody's like, no, 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 you have to try and build it as a relationship. From your heart, talk, you know, be sincere, be present. And I was like, all right. And so I started doing that, and that is, like it says here, I got immediate results. unlike anything I ever did before. And I'm a results guy. If something works and I can see it and it's obvious, why would I not continue with it, right? If I can tell that if I do A, B happens, why would I not? It obviously works. And so that's my experience with this. The example I always like to tell, like the earliest one I can think of, is when I was sitting in this outpatient program and I knew I was going to drink that night. I knew exactly what I was doing. I knew that this place like gets out at 9 from the outpatient program, but the liquor store closes at 10. I knew where I was going to go. I knew how I was going to get there. At the time, I think I was driving my father's car because I had crashed mine in a drunk driving accident. And so I'm like, you know, I'm going to go drive to the liquor store and then I'm going to immediately drink and then drunk drive my father's car home because, you know, I don't have a car anymore. And that I knew exactly. I had this plan in my head and I was obsessing and it was going to happen. Every single other time up to that point, it had happened. I start thinking about drinking, boom, all the dominoes start falling one after another. And then that's it. I'm going to drink. This time, something happened that had never happened before. I started to pray, and I asked God to remove the obsession for drinking from me. And at that time, I got an immediate and, like, I guess, overwhelming result. I started to feel a physical sensation as the desire to drink was, like, removed from me. And it was almost like a feeling inside my head where, like, the obsession to drink was just, like, going forward further and further as it took over my brain, and then this just sucked it right back. And it was like a physical sensation. I never had anything like that before, and I did not drink that night. And it was the first time ever, that I'm aware of anyway, where my prayer produced an immediate and an obvious result. And it's like, okay, this works. So I would be an idiot not to continue with that, right? You know, if I get an immediate result for something. So with that in mind, it's absolutely been my experience that my completely inadequate and limited conception of God, my even, you know, somewhat skeptical up until that point, just this sincerity, you know, and talking about those who earnestly seek Him, being earnest and really trying, you know, and praying from the heart, it made all the difference. And a lot of that, I'm going to say all of that, probably was facilitated by the fact that I got to have my own conception of God, because I would have been unwilling up until that point, and I wouldn't have taken it seriously. But having the freedom to do it with an inadequate definition of God, that allowed me to open the door. So let's go on to the next paragraph where they're going to talk more about that stuff. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to... Oh no, I read that one already. So, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. That was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Oh man. Like I said, so true for me. And this is almost like a reiteration of my own story here in the book. It's pretty amazing that, you know, this is like 80, I think at the time it was like 80 years ago, and I could read this and it was so true for me that it could have been written about me. And what that tells me is not all. What that tells me is that I am absolutely qualified to be here, and that if I have the same sickness as these folks, then I can have the same solution as these folks, and that's a really wonderful thing. So moving on from there, it says, besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. I feel like a broken record. This is also my experience, you know, just being resistant and resistant and resistant, and then finally just being beaten into a state of reasonableness. And for me, what that felt like, if you want to call it surrender, to me, the state of reasonableness felt like, I don't care if I ever have fun again. I don't care if I'm ever happy again. I don't care if I ever get to do what I want again. Anything is better than what I have now. Literally anything. I will do anything. And that is where I started. And how do I put this? I guess the new journey that I started out on had to start from zero for me. Because everything that I had up until that point was just like a shoddy foundation. Everything that I had known and everything that I had sort of integrated into this self that I built, you know, like this false person that I presented out to the world, all of it had to be discarded. And I had to start from zero. Because none of that was authentically who I was. All of it was just who I thought the world wanted to see. And by being willing to just completely give up and surrender everything that I was and everything that I wanted, that's what allowed me to move forward, building a brand new life and a brand new person, but the person that God always wanted me to be, instead of the person that I thought would impress other people. And so it wasn't until I was faced with destruction, and not even just physical destruction, but just destruction of my own life as I let go of everything. That's when I became open-minded on spiritual matters, when I was willing to just literally hit the factory reset. That's the way I think of it. So the reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater than himself. We think there are good reasons. Let's have a look at some of them. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts theories of all kinds, provided they're firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this ready acceptance? Simply because it's impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. Everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there is good evidence but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It is being constantly revealed, as mankind studies the material world, that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. To illustrate, the prosaic steel girder is a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Science tells us so. We have no reason to doubt it. When, however, the perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there's an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence, right there our perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments, thinking we believe this universe needs no God to explain it. Were our contentions true, it would follow that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. I remember thinking, before I got sober, I remember thinking to myself this sort of like nihilistic view that there is no meaning, there's no real morality, everything is relative, there's no purpose, you know, and the best I could come up with is that my purpose is just to figure out what I want to do in this life, you know, and to try to have fun along the way. That's where I ended up. Like, there's no intrinsic purpose, and there's no intrinsic anything. Everything is just derived from whatever we say. And what I have found out is that I seem to get direction and purpose when I seek to help others. The way that I phrased this one time, and I think that this is probably the easiest way, is that for me, the pursuit of happiness, my own pursuit of happiness, is counterproductive. It doesn't work. And I can't explain why. All I can do is report that it does not work. For me, the only way to arrive at happiness and peace and a sense of satisfaction is to try to contribute to the rest of the world. And the way that I do that is the way I was taught in these rooms. But for me, the seeking of my own happiness and satisfaction in this life just backfires on a regular basis. That's not to say that I don't find happiness and satisfaction in my life. It's to say that I don't find them directly by chasing them. I find them as a byproduct of pursuing other purpose. But I didn't know any of that until I came in here and was taught. You know, up until I came in here, I thought that having a purpose was stupid. You know, that everybody should just go out there and do what they want and have fun. You know, not quite an anarchist, but getting pretty close, right? And so what I found is that when I did come to have a sense of guidance and purpose in here, it was like this missing void inside of me had finally been filled. And I finally found reason for existing. Before that, I was just rudderless. I didn't know what I was doing, and I felt like, if I died, who would care? Why am I even here? If there's no reason for me to be here, why am I suffering? And then after I found purpose, which is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to my fellows, which is, you know, what I was taught here, all of a sudden, I'm willing to fight through adversity and discomfort in order to serve others. And it's like those things just don't really have the same meaning to me that they used to. You know, pain just, to me, is not operative as an obstacle anymore. You know, discomfort used to dissuade me from doing things, and now all it does is just make them slightly less enjoyable. But it doesn't stop me, because it's not like my comfort is paramount. It's just not the most important thing to me anymore. The most important thing is the overarching purpose. So with this in mind, talking about how I used to believe that there was no God and that everything was just basically nonsense, the way I see things today, I feel a sense of pity for the person that I used to be. The person who had no purpose and who was easily turned away by the slightest difficulty and who could not bear any sort of pain in a long term because there was no meaning to any of it. I look back at that and I wonder how I even got as far as I did. And the only thing I could think is that it was alcohol that carried me until I could find a better solution in here. You know, otherwise I would have killed myself a long time before that. So let's move on to the next paragraph from there. It says, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the alpha and the omega, the beginning and end of it all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? We who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We've learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatsoever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. I think that characterizes my path as I came in here very well. This dubious path. When I was a little kid, I remember that my grandmother was a Eucharistic minister. That means that she was the person that hands out the wafer at church, right? And it was very important to me culturally when I was a kid to go to church and to do all of these things. And then I guess around the age of maybe 17, 18, around there, I started to stray away from that stuff because I realized that it didn't jive with the lifestyle that I wanted for myself. Then I went away to college and my grandmother died and it was like, poof, that entire thing went away from me. And it was almost like within a matter of a year or two, I went from that being an important cultural part of my life to being something that I thought was stupid and hokey and that I wanted absolutely no part of. And I started instead to look at religious people instead of as people that I admired, to people that I despised and ridiculed. And by doing that, I distanced myself from those people, even when they could have contributed to my life or even if I could have contributed to them. I never took the time to look at the lives that they were living and the quality of the life they were living. Instead, I sort of looked at it as they're wrong about, you know, their religion, and therefore I want nothing to do with them and they're a bunch of idiots. And that's basically where I was. And like it says, I never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. I never bothered to. Now, going back to what it says earlier, the only reason that I decided to was because I was absolutely destroyed and I had no other options left. You know, but that's the good thing, I think, about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and also the good thing about God in general, is that no matter how destroyed I am, I can always go there. And it doesn't matter what I've said or what I've done, I'll always be forgiven, welcomed, and can always find a way to contribute, no matter what I did in the past. And it's been my experience not only with the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but also with the God of my understanding, that it doesn't matter where I came from. All that matters is that going forward, I'm willing to be a contributor, and I'm on board. So let's go on from there. In our personal stories, you'll find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these are matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They're questions for each individual to settle for himself. On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. As a celebrated American statesman put it, let's look at the record. So there, I'm gonna say one thing that I talk to new people about, and I nobody did this for me, but I heard of somebody doing it, and I was like, wow, that's so cool. I'm going to start doing that for people. And it seems to really work well, which is for new people who come in and have a problem with the idea of God or even the word God. I tell them to take a sheet of paper and draw a line down the middle, and at the top of one side put God is, and on the other side put God isn't. And I tell them that this will help you find your own conception of God. You know, because when I came in, I didn't really even know necessarily what I believed, but I was willing to work with whatever I had. But when I was trying to figure out my own conception of God, it took me a long time. We're talking like years for me to really, I guess, understand what I believed. And I think that if I had done that exercise earlier, it could have expedited that process for me. And so I do that for new folks, especially those who are like, I don't like God, I don't believe it. And I'm like, well, God is a word, right? God is just a word. The idea of the power, that's the point. The point is to have a relationship with this power. It doesn't matter what you call it. If you don't like the word God, don't use the word God. You know, but the point is, get a relationship with a power that's greater than you. Now, everything that you don't like, write it all on one side of the paper and get rid of it. You never have to deal with that ever again. You know, and on the other side of the paper, write what you can work with. And that is what you're going to use. It doesn't matter if it's things that other people told you were wrong or bad. If you honestly can get behind it and earnestly seek it, that's what you work with. And that's my thing that I impress upon new people is that the earnestness of seeking, for me, was the most important. And I think that that is the crux of it. Because I didn't get results until I tried sincerely. So I try to get people past the obstinacy and the prejudice and whatnot by giving them an exercise to basically do what this says, which is to come with your own ideas, and that you don't have to believe what anybody ever told you about God. You just work with what makes sense to you. And so I think being internally consistent and pursuing with vigor this relationship makes all the difference. Or at least it did for me, and I've seen it for a lot of other people too. But is that for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
that's the train.
So I'll move on to the next paragraph from there. I don't want to harp on it, but yeah, super important to me to build the relationship instead of just trying to fake it. So, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. So with that, I think I'm going to just go on for a couple minutes about how the power of God has done for me that which I can't do for myself, and how it has been a revolutionary change in my way of living and thinking. So, since the initial, I guess, coming to believe and making the decision, I've continuously recommitted to that. Now, there have been a lot of times in my life where I didn't like necessarily what was going on in my life, and I was getting ready to try and fight. And sometimes I have successfully turned it over and listened for direction and flowed with things, and other times I have fought. And my experience is that me fighting things usually aggravates the problem rather than resolving it. And that me flowing with the situation the problems just seem to get taken care of. Either they stop mattering, or there's some other thing that happens that basically makes them unimportant, or the thing resolves itself. I can't explain how it works. All I can say is that it's true for me, and that just about everything that's good in my life has been a product of just a gift, really, is what it is. And I'll give you a couple examples. So, starting with the easy one, my son coming into my life. Not something I planned, not something that in the beginning I was happy about, but it was part of the motivation for me trying to get clean and sober. You know, and today that relationship with my son is one of the best things in my life. Hanging out with him and spending time with him, being a parent to him is one of the things I value the most in my life. That's not something that I earned at all. It's not something that I created or planned. It just, you know, having him in my life is a product of me doing the right thing and, you know, not screwing it up, really, is all it is. And being willing to listen. And throughout the years, I can't tell you how many times I was like about to be, you know, too hard on him or whatever else. And I would get maybe either the sense of just shut your mouth and listen instead of talking. And sometimes I would listen to that and it would go wonderfully. And other times I would just be impatient and it would not go wonderfully. You know, or somebody else, like my wife, for example, would be like, oh, wait, you know, be gentle. And so then I, instead of being like stern, I would be gentle. And then I would find out shortly after that I totally misunderstood the whole situation in the first place. And those types of things happen to me consistently in all areas of my life. I can say that everything from the job that I have to the family that I have to the house that I have, everything that's good in my life, everything that I'm grateful for, has been a product of me just saying yes when God puts something in my life and then honoring it. And that's it. And almost, I'm going to say almost everything that I really have fought for in my life wasn't that satisfying when I got it. I find that gratitude comes much more readily and is much more durable for the things that I have been given rather than for the things that I have earned. And I'm fortunate enough that on some days my eyes are open and I see the gifts for what they are and I understand what's been given. The only problem I have is that my ego wants to reemerge on any given day, and so it really tries hard to take credit for things. And with this is the one scary thing that I'm going to mention. My life's been good for a while. I got sober in 2008, and it's been enough time where my life that's good seems normal. You know, like the old miserable life I had, it doesn't have that same visceral reaction inside when I think about it. You know, when I pray at the end of the day and I thank God for another sober day, it doesn't have that same impact of like, oh my God, I'm so grateful that I stayed sober today. Today it's just like, okay, another sober day. You know, thank you for that, God. And it's almost, you know, it's like, thank you for giving me air again today. It's just so normal and so, you know, I take it for granted is what I'm saying. And the danger to me is that when I take things for granted and become, I'm not going to say ungrateful, but not actively and mindfully grateful, I tend to lose track of things. And so my illness wants me to take credit for everything in my life. Now, I know that I don't keep myself sober, but I also know that if my disease is left unchecked, eventually I'll start thinking that I keep myself sober. And eventually I'm going to walk right out the door. So for me, the idea of turning my will and my life over and trying to build this relationship can't be a one and done. It has to be a continuous process. And I surrender things in my life to this day. And the example that I'm going to give you now is today I'm revising my resume. I'm applying for a new job. Now, for a couple of weeks while I was obsessing about this constantly, my head exploded, and it was like all I could think of for a couple minutes, especially when a couple of the folks I work with were like, oh, you'd be a great fit for that job. All of a sudden, I was the top of the heap in my mind, and I was getting ready to take credit for everything. I'm great. So what did I do? I called my sponsor, and I had a chat with him, and I told him, like, listen, I know this. I know this is nonsense. I know that my head is trying to steer me into taking credit for everything and differentiating me, telling me I'm special. And I know all of this is crap. At the end of the day, I know that anywhere I am is just a product of what I learned in the rooms of AA, which is like, show up a little early, be kind to people, talk to them, listen more than you talk, stay a little late while you're there, pay attention, be mindful. You know, all of these things that are just a product of like reducing me and growing God. But my mind wants me to take credit for it. And when I do that, all gratitude goes out the window and I am eventually screwed. So this idea of, you know, just because I have a good life now and I have a relationship with this power now, the idea that this is a permanent thing and that it's on autopilot, that scares the hell out of me. So I try to be mindful of this stuff. And at the end of the day, what I need more than anything is you guys. I need you to be my mirrors. I need you to tell me when I am off base. And that means I need to be open to whatever you say. And I need to constantly be seeking feedback. And so, you know, I have a sponsor that I probably don't call enough, but I think most of us could probably say that same statement. I have a network of people that I am accountable to as well. And I recently started doing a steel-on-steel group, which is a group of four people that sort of do a thorough 10th and 11th step together to hold each other accountable on this journey. That's where I'm at now with this journey of building, maintaining, and growing this relationship with the power that keeps me sober and which gives me the purpose in life. And gave the meaning that was never there before. So I'll close there and thank you for letting me talk to you.